You're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Hello, space and treasure coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510, WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere on God's magnificent planet.
That's right. On 1510wwbc.com, you can hit that listen live button and get us on any one of your streaming devices. And then, of course, on same station, 1510WWBC, you can hit the archives under the on-demand and pick by date. Of course, we share all of it on our social media, which is Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, on SitaMediaInc.com, which is our website, and, you know, all of the places all over the world.
That's
and
right.
We've had 15 years worth of awesome shows and great guests and great information to share. So on the website, if you just, you can even put it in. You can even search by topic or by person, and you'd be able to find any one of the shows.
That's right. And we've had a lot of people. I didn't realize this, but we had a lot of messages on the Viewpoint with Sita and Friends page and the Sita Media page. And so I answered all of them this morning. And we got a couple more people that want to call in.
Excellent.
But our show today, Elle, you know, I just decided that, you know, we were just going to have a show today with just the three of us and two call-ins, because there's so much stuff going on around the state, the nation, and the world, right?
Yeah.
And for our listeners who are tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends for the first time or repeat guest, on Mondays, Ellen O'Neill, myself, Sita Begee, and Ali Tambor, and we have Danny Whiting that runs our board. We sit here as though this studio is part of our living room, and we talk about issues, things that are happening right here in Brevard County, Florida, things that are happening around the state, in our nation, whether it's financial literacy, whether you want to write a book, whether it's the environment, septic tanks, running for office. Some people want to talk about a nonprofit. Maybe they're saving the whales. Maybe they're saving the manatees.
That's right.
They're teaching people how to grow a riverbank to protect the oyster beds, whatever it is. Come on our show and we'll talk. Today's no different. I had a couple of people that wanted to come in studio today, but I decided that with so much going on with President Biden actually stepping down, Kamala Harris now being the presumptive nominee for the Democratic Party. We just watched the Republican National Convention with President Trump. And although our show is not political, we all know that life is political.
Yes.
From the minute you are born to the type of coffin or cremation site that you use when you pass away, it's all money. Mm-hmm. From the diapers they put on for you in the nursery and the kind of formula they feed you and the kind of samples they give you to wash your clothes with, it's all political.
Yes.
Somebody's making money off of you. Right,
absolutely, Elle? Yep. And we live in a capitalistic environment, and not only do we like the capital as far as money goes, but unfortunately we like to capitalize sometimes on the things that are going on in the news one way or another. And that's one of the things I've always loved about our show, Sita, is that you've always really been responsible about the way that we bring up topics and to make sure that there's no name calling, there's no hate. It's just an education to make sure that people are aware and aware of resources that are out there to be able to get the good information. Don't listen to social media. Don't get piped up with your friends about things that are rumors or, you know, conspiracy theories or any of that kind of stuff. We are just here to really talk about the good people of the world that make decisions to do better for our world.
Well,
and whether that means that you're running for political office or whether you're opening a business, we want to hear from everybody. And we want to be able to have all sides and be kind of that intermediate, like calm, that peaceful,
calm, moderate
feeling,
voice, right?
Moderate voice.
And the thing is, we all want to leave a good footprint behind for our grandchildren and the next generation.
Indeed.
Right? So, of course, today I decided to have my guest is a gentleman. His name is Mike Shalasko. And I hope I'm saying his name right. And he's calling in.
Good enough.
And he's calling in. We're going to talk a little bit about voting, making a plan to vote, why people vote, the top issues that voters care about. He's on first segment. And the second segment, we're going to be talking with an astrologer. She's a karmic guide and a spiritual coach. Her name is Sirat Mawaha, and she's going to be on second segment. So, Mike, take it away. Tell us a little bit about yourself. And you've been quite involved in Democratic politics for a while. And I think you agree with us that when people say, I don't get involved in politics, they're just making some of us smile because life is political.
Everything.
Without a doubt, life is political. And I was, yes, very involved in politics in the Democratic Party in Florida. But I am a refugee from Florida now, and so I wish all of your listeners a good morning from Las Cruces, New Mexico, the land of enchantment, where diversity and civility are celebrated. And a few things to know about Las Cruces. First, it's not flat. And that's the first thing you notice when you get here. In my backyard, I have 9 miles of desert, and right after that, I have 9,000-foot mountains. We have great Mexican food. The cost of living is extremely low. I live in the lap of luxury. A house that I paid $500,000 for here would be $2 or $3 million in Brevard County. And from my political perspective, every elected official in my town is a Democrat, which I sort of like.
Right.
But I do miss some things about Florida. And, you know, one of them is, we didn't talk about this earlier, one of the things I miss about Florida are the sea turtles. We, of course, have no beaches here. We have almost no water here. And I did sea turtle conservation work for 13 years in Florida. And I do miss walking the beaches every morning. And Melbourne is a hotbed of sea turtle nesting, as we all know.
Yeah, and you were quite involved with the Sarasota, Charlotte Democratic Progressive Caucus when you lived here in Florida, as well as you were a board member of the Democratic Progressive Caucus of Florida. And you decided at one point that it was an area where you didn't think that it was mathematically possible to win. And so you said, all right, I'm out of here.
That's pretty much it. I was working full-time for the Democratic Party. I had about a half dozen different titles, board positions, Florida Democratic Party positions. And I was a campaign manager. I actually won a campaign for the mayor of Venice. A good friend of mine, we got him elected, and that was my last success in Florida politically. And after 3 years of all of the infighting and the nastiness, which seems to characterize Florida politics lately, he gave up as well, and he now lives in Tucson, Arizona. So, yes, I was heavily involved in the Democratic Party. Yes, I'm glad to be out of it. I still consider myself a Democrat. I still keep track of politics in Florida and certainly here in New Mexico and elsewhere, but it's not governing my life anymore, which it was. And that's a great feeling. For all of you political junkies who would like to take a break, it's a great feeling.
Yeah, it is. And I think a lot of us who were involved in so many campaigns before, in the Hillary Clinton campaign with, you know, Gore and Lieberman. I remember getting involved in campaigns before with President Obama. A lot of us activists, I notice, a lot of people are now becoming more spiritual and not as much with the politics anymore. And I think it's kind of a mindset and a shift that comes with aging and wisdom and things like that. But we all watched in horror when President Biden was involved in that debate almost a few weeks ago. And what I saw was age, spirituality, someone feeble. And it's going to happen to all of us, Mike, right? So what was your take that night when you saw that? And, of course, now we have Kamala Harris is our presumptive nominee. How did you feel when you saw a man who had given over 50 years of his life to public service, our president, and what happens to human beings as we age with dignity and compassion?
It was a very sad evening. You work in an industry where you deal with people who are aging all the time. I have a 94-year-old mother, and I've been basically managing her affairs for the last 7 years, and she's currently here with me in Las Cruces in a lockdown memory care facility a couple miles from my house, and she barely remembers her family and so far still remembers my name. But so when I saw what was happening, it was just clear to me that it was time for him to pass the baton. It really was. And it is old age. I mean, I'm 73 now. In fact, I just came back from a week in London, England, and I was riding the Underground, which was really cool. And someone got out of their seat and came up to me and said, "Would you like a seat, sir?"
Oh, dear.
Because I look so old.
And, yeah.
Boy, did I feel bad. So I didn't take the seat and explain to them that I grew up in New York City riding the subways.
There you go.
But so, you know, we're noticing, like I've noticed on social media, people, I don't know what has happened to human beings and where we lost our compassion, but there's so much meanness about President Biden and old age. Where do you think all this negativity is coming from, that people can't let an elderly person just age with wisdom and experience and just go right into retirement?
Yeah, it's a huge problem in this country. This particular presidential contest brings that to light on both sides of the aisle, because the other candidate on the Republican side is also quite old and also prone to gaffes, and also maybe shouldn't be running for a job that is that difficult, that challenging. I think we have some important decisions to make as Americans. You know, what are we going to do with an aging population? We're at a point now where our population growth is about to go negative, and there are not enough young people to support the elder retirees, and certainly not enough services to support the large population of people that are suffering through that horrible disease of dementia. You know, we've got a lot of soul searching to do. And you know, one political party is looking to shut down the border at the same time that we need lots of young workers to support these elderly retirees.
Yeah, I could never understand that, Mike, because we've got all these people that want to come into our country, and most of them are coming to work. Not everyone is a criminal or a rapist or whatever, right? I work in the industry where we don't have enough nursing assistants, nurses, janitors, cooks, people to take care of the lawns. We don't have enough people. And I often wonder why the politicians don't go to the board and say, "Hey, if you're a nurse, we need you. You're a physician, we need you. And here's what you have to do. No crime. You know, come into the country, work, pay taxes, and live." Why is the border? Because now they're saying that the top three issues for Americans is immigration, which is the border, the economy, and of course, the culture wars, right? So why do you think the politicians kick the immigration issue? It's like they kick the can down the road constantly knowing fully well what you just said, that we need assistance in this country, why do you think that's happened? What happened to the people that we elect into office? What happens to their brain?
That's a really good question that I think most Americans would like an answer to. I before I retired and got involved with politics, I worked for technology companies, and for the last 20 years of that career, I did business with government officials exclusively. So I did business with senior level officials in every state in the country, and even did some work internationally. And I came to the conclusion fairly early in my career in dealing with government that dealing with politicians was almost a waste of time, because unless you were going to find a way to pay them off, they really weren't interested in anyone who wanted to actually make government work better. Okay, so, and that's what I was doing. I was selling technology to make government work better. But I found that the top-level bureaucrats were the people to talk to, because they were there because they cared. They didn't care about the politics. They didn't care about anything except doing the job for the people that they were tasked with serving. And I found it absolutely refreshing to deal with those folks. And I find it absolutely distressing when people attack the civil service bureaucracy, because that's what keeps our country going. That's what keeps things stable when these crazy politicians are getting up there, you know, shouting at each other and not getting anything done.
Yeah, and they slam, the agencies. Here in Brevard, if, you know, when we go to the DMV, we're treated with respect. When we go to the supervisor of elections, was just on our show a few weeks ago, very respectful. We go to the port, great service. The government agencies here in Brevard, we don't really have an issue with it. But you're right. When people get elected, they say, I'm going to do this and I'm going to change this. And okay, great. But there's a way to do things and be civil. You don't have to slam every government agency. Yes, the border has people that are coming in illegally, but we have an immigration system. We have a system for checks and balances if we can enforce it.
Yeah.
But for years, it's not President Biden's fault or Kamala Harris's fault. All the presidents have tried to tackle this issue with the border. And I think one of the things that, as Americans, that we ought to look at is, why do people flee? The root cause of why people flee: a marriage, a job, a neighborhood, a country, because there's something bad happening, Mike. And, I mean, do you feel like the politicians are honest when they talk about the border and say, wait a minute, let's find out why this mom, who is a Christian lady or Muslim or Hindu or whatever, got pregnant, and many of you said, carry that baby for 9 months. And she carried the baby, and she lives in a country where she can't get food, water, and shelter. And so she's willing to risk her life and the life of that baby and come to your border with barbed wires, alligators, snakes, mud, rainfall. Do you think the Democratic Party or politicians are wording this issue properly?
Yeah, I agree with you at the national level, certainly. I have a slightly different perspective now that I live 50 miles from the Mexican border in an area where 60% of the people are Hispanic, and probably about the same percentage of elected officials are Hispanic. So we get more compassionate perspective, if you will. But, you know, we're ground zero for the quote-unquote border crisis. I live right near El Paso, Ciudad Juarez, one of the busiest border crossings in the country. And we certainly have a lot of people coming across that border that are looking for a better life and that are fleeing horrible circumstances, primarily in Central America. And here they are treated compassionately, and there's a little less vitriol than there is at the national level. And I'll tell you a funny story. I decided that I wanted to go to Mexico for lunch, which is really interesting that I can do that. And so I got my wife, we got in the car, we drove to Puerto Palomas. And we were told you didn't have to drive across the border because you need special insurance. And so we parked on the U.S. side of the border and we walked across right through that famous wall that was built by the last administration. And we were the only ones crossing the border at that time, which was really weird. You know, I was expecting these huge crowds of immigrants trying to get into the country. Nothing. So we cross the border. We walk across to a store called the Pink Store. We have lunch, listen to some mariachis, get up, walk back across the border. Again, we're the only ones walking across the border. We walk into this huge building filled with these customs and immigration folks, and it was like they were so happy to have somebody to talk to.
I liken it a lot to the news that they show in New York when we're having like a wind event that they call a hurricane here. You know, it's this. I liken it to the same, to hype it way up over nothing, over absolutely nothing.
Right.
So, I had the same experience, by the way.
Right. So Mike, you know, we're watching that Kamala Harris is now the nominee, and Ali, one of our hosts here in our studio, has a question for you about Kamala.
Hey, Mike, I was curious because when I heard the news yesterday that Kamala was going to be the replacement, I was concerned. Do you think her race is going to have a problem?
I think race is always a problem in this country, and that's very sad.
Yes.
But remember that a lot of the vitriol that we're experiencing today began because of race, because a black man was elected president. But that black man had one of the most distinguished records as president of any in our history.
I agree.
And if you look at the polling, the Democrats that were polling the highest, the Democrat polling the highest was Michelle Obama. And she was polling 11 points ahead of the competition. So I think that the American people are ready for throwing out old stereotypes. Kamala is an amazing person. She's part Jamaican. She's part Indian. She identifies as black.
She's the United Nations. She is the United Nations, and she's married to a Jewish guy.
Yes, she is. And you know, we should be celebrating that diversity in this country and celebrating the fact that we have an opportunity to elevate that level of diversity to the position of president. And I'm very proud of her. And I'm one of the people who contributed some of that $50 million she got in the first 18 hours or whatever it was. And I really believe that the American people in total are able to look past stereotypes like that and look at the qualifications of the person. So I think she's going to win this election.
Me too. And I'm also throwing my support behind her as well. Of course, I'm Indian and I was born in the Caribbean, so I have a bit of a connection. So it seems as though immigration is going to be the dividing line, because it's going to be a major vulnerable thing for her. But at the other end of the spectrum, I'm looking at the culture wars, Mike. And a lot of our friends in the Democratic Party had spoken about this before and said, hey, it's about the economy. People are concerned about interest rates. They're concerned about the home insurance rates. They're concerned about mortgages, daycare. You know, you carry these children and then you need a place to put them so you can go to work. And folks are worried about what's happening in our schools. And I can't tell you how many times people point to Democrats and say, you guys are teaching our kids to be gay in public schools. How do we message this now properly so that the culture wars, immigration, and the economy is something that Democrats pay attention to? What is your take on the culture wars versus the economy?
We could talk about that forever.
Yeah. That's a good sigh. That's how I feel sometimes.
Yeah, the economy. Yeah, exactly. So I knocked on a lot of doors when I was working for the Democratic Party, and I'll never forget one door I knocked on in Northport, which is in Charlotte County, and they were independent, non-party affiliated, a husband, a wife, they had three kids, and I'm knocking on this door at like 6:30 in the evening, and I always feel bad doing that because, you know, I know they're young people, they're working, they have kids, they're trying to get dinner on the table kind of thing, but I knock on the door and they were willing to talk to me. And what they said was, they don't watch the news. They don't really know who's running for what. All they're doing is trying to make ends meet. And these days, that requires a two-income family that can afford to pay outrageous amounts of money for child care services. And still that can't see a path to buying their own home or retiring with dignity or putting their kids through college. So these are the people that you have to be able to reach out to, and they're the most difficult people to reach because they don't have time. They don't have time to think about all of this stuff that we're talking about. All they have time to do is try to survive. And we have to find a better way to reach out to those people. We need to do things like, you know, making Election Day a holiday, making sure that everyone is educated as to how our electoral system works and how to go about voting. People just don't know this stuff. And we need to do more and more of that outreach to a broad community of people that are concerned. They're concerned because they don't have time not to be concerned.
Yeah, because, I mean, most people are concerned about the economy, but at the same time, the brown and black people, the immigrants, I feel as an immigrant that sometimes I feel as though people point fingers and say, hey, well, you guys are doing very well and we're left behind. But they forget that I took one can of beans and made six meals out of it. They forgot I took one chicken and cut it up and made, you know, four meals out of it. It's called sacrifice sometimes. And I feel like sometimes the immigrants are being slammed because, you know, they three and four families will live in one home to save that rent money because it's cultural. And then they're able to make a down payment on a small, modest home. And they take care of the yard and they know how to do things from Home Depot and whatever. And voila, you have the American dream. So why do you feel like so many immigrants are fearful to speak out? They're fearful to be activists again. They're fearful because they feel as though people are saying, well, wait a minute, you made it and I didn't. I got left behind. How do we help people to see that we didn't really take anything from you? We just came and we worked hard as well.
Yeah, you know, it's almost comical. My father was born in Poland. My grandfather emigrated to the United States to escape Hitler and sent for my grandmother and my father. And my grandfather, who was studying to be a scribe, which was like a rabbi, he became a butcher. And he worked a very hard life. And my grandmother became a seamstress in some of the New York City sweatshops. And now I live in this fabulous home. I live on a cash basis, and I'm very, very comfortable. And that was all because of what my parents did that contributed to not only my well-being, but the well-being of the entire economy. And people have forgotten that. Almost all of these people who were slamming immigrants actually are the product of immigration. So you need to get them to do some soul searching and look back at their family history and understand that these poor people are going through the same thing that your family went through one or two or three generations back. And it's an education process. I don't know how else to put it.
Yeah, and, you know, Congress dissolves and goes chaotic over the border security and national security. I mean, they didn't even get involved in helping President Biden to pass his bill when he talked about deportations for many illegal people and finding a pathway to citizenship for the Dreamers. And, you know, he talked about increasing border security. And all those were feasible. Those were things that would help our country. Imagine President Biden wanted to increase the border security by 41%, which would have been great. Why do you think the politicians that we elect on both sides would not help a sitting president to pass a border security bill, even though they're going out into their districts and screaming bloody murder about immigrants?
I don't have an answer for you. There is no rational answer to that question. It's people that put politics ahead of the people, and politics ahead of doing their job, which is protecting the public safety. And yes, there was a bipartisan bill that was put together, and President Biden put together a lot of bipartisan legislation. I mean, he will be remembered for all of that. It's just amazing how much important bipartisan legislation he got through Congress. This one, there was no excuse for what happened. Just because one presidential candidate decides that the border should be his issue and we shouldn't solve the problem, that's just not acceptable. We need to solve the problem, and this is not the first time that we've had bipartisan solutions on the table that have been squashed for no good reason other than politics. We just need to solve the problem, and it is a problem. I mean, I'm not saying that it's not a problem because I can drive across and have lunch, because I had a house party here, and one of the people that showed up worked for Customs and Border Patrol. And he was telling me about all of the issues that they have, and they're serious issues. And in fact, he actually was one that was sent up to New York City to see what was happening with some of the bad actors that were coming across the border and ending up in New York. So there are problems. They are solvable problems.
But you got to compromise and do it together. So we have a minute
Absolutely.
Left. We have 1 minute left of this segment. I'd like to give you this quick minute. A lot of people are saying that democracy is on the ballot. Can you, in a minute or so, tell our listeners here, Mike Schlasko, on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, why it is imperative to make a plan to vote early, vote by mail, or vote on Election Day, because democracy is on the ballot?
We have a country that is ruled by laws that stem from our Constitution, and we are the democracy that every country in the world looks up to. Yet on January 6th, someone tried to stop the peaceful transition of power. That kind of behavior cannot continue. That kind of behavior flies in the face of everything about this great country and everything about what our founding fathers envisioned. So, yes, everyone should make a plan on how they're going to vote. Vote by mail, vote in person, vote early, but do vote, because your vote counts. And some people who don't believe that their vote counts should look at some of the elections and how close they are. Those 1, 2, 10, 20, 100 votes count. When I was the campaign manager for the mayor of Venice, we won by 80 votes. Elections are that close these days, so every person should vote, should make a plan how to vote, should make sure that they vote. And yes, democracy is on the ballot. We cannot have another January 6th. It just can't be.
Well, Mike, I love speaking with you, because you're very calm and rational, and I wish I could send you to the U.S. Congress and let you speak to them and teach them how to compromise. Well, I'll come with you, and I'll bring my curry chicken. How's that?
There we go. That solves everything.
Oh, I like curry chicken.
Yeah, see? Okay, so Ellen, you take it away.
Yes, thank you, Mike, for sharing all that great insight. And, of course, we always promote League of Women Voters here in Florida, specifically around here, because they do have the best explanations of things. And as we come into voting season, please make sure that you get time to educate yourself about the candidates as well as all the amendments that are on the going to be on the ballot here in November. Of course, if you have not applied for the mail-in ballot, you can do that on votebrevard.gov and make sure that you get that in. But right now, we're going to listen to our sponsors, and we'll be right back with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends after these messages.
Servicing for free. The delivery, setup,
are you longing
home,
for a taste
removal
of
old furniture, and warranty.
Lizette's Cajun Bistro is the place to be. They offer Cajun and Creole staples as well as American, vegan, and vegetarian options. The restaurant is located at 2447 North Wickham Road, Unit 146. All menu items are prepared daily from scratch and made to order. Dine in or take out as well as outside seating. Live music on selected weekends. So the next time you have a taste for Louisiana, stop by Lizette's Cajun Bistro, 2447 North Wickham Road.
Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000. Or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With three locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County. Contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345. Located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne, that's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. What a robust first second we had on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And just talking to Mike Shalasko really made me see that there are so many people who are so intellectual and know what politics is about. And how
cool
they can,
and collected.
And how they can help save our democracy too, right?
Yeah.
So our show is heard on AM 1510 WWBC. We are 94.7, 99.9, 100.7. And, of course, online everywhere, Ellen. And it's no different. Our friend is calling in all the way from Chicago.
That's right.
Second
here
segment.
Here on 1510wbc.com. You can hit that listen live button and get us on any one of your streaming devices. And then, of course, all of our shows are archived there as well under the on-demand button. And you can choose by date. It's Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Of course, on our website, sitamediainc.com, we post all of the pictures and the great the MP3s, if you will, so that you can download them from there as well. And then, of course, on all of our social media, Facebook, Instagram, all those great little spots.
Right, and that's how I found C-Rat, our second segment guest.
You're like
I
a social media
on,
expert.
On Instagram, yeah. So our second segment is with C-Rat Mawa, and she's calling in from Chicago. She is a Vedic astrologer, a karmic guide, and a spiritual coach. And I'm going to let her talk to our listeners here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends and share with us how she uses the ancient Indian scriptures to focus on helping us celestial bodies here on Earth. So talk to us a little bit, my friend, and tell us about yourself and how did you get into this field?
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Sita, for having me on board. I'm so happy to be here. So my interest in astrology has, I always say that it's coming from a past life because from a very young age, I have been very intrigued by it. And then I started studying the books of the scriptures that ancient Indian scriptures about Vedic astrology. And most of it, I self-studied. And then I went through proper education under a guru. Guru is a teacher in India who specializes in this particular study of Vedic astrology. So I'll tell a little bit about what this is and why I call it Vedic astrology and not just simple astrology. So this is based off of a very old study in India. It's called Jyotish, which basically means the study of light. So it is supposed to basically, if someone's feeling lost in their life and wants specific directions on how to move on, we as an astrologer are able to study their chart and guide them through certain events in their life. So how this works is that when you are born, at that very moment, in the place that you're born, in the time that you're born, I take a snapshot of the sky in that very moment. And I see that chart, the snapshot of the sky as to how the planets are placed, what degrees they are placed in, what constellations they are placed in. And then I can predict about pretty much everything about your life. So how your what your nature is like, how you probably will look like, what your spouse is going to be like, your children, your career, longevity, health, pretty much all aspects.
Wow.
And let's say, yeah, and let's say you are in a particular career, let's say you're in media, but I also know as an astrologer, which you may not know, that you have a really good luck in real estate. So I can guide you in that particular area. Also, certain problems that we see in life, which are not under our control, are problems coming from badly placed planets. And as an astrologer, I can also guide how to fix those planets, how we can do specific remedial measures to fix those issues so that we stop facing the problems that we are facing. So it's a very deep, detailed study.
And it is. And, you know, it also goes right along with the theme of our show, because we try to bring people on our show that are doing their best to use their wisdom and their experience on planet Earth to leave a good footprint behind for not just right. for our grandchildren, but for the next generation. And when you speak, I think of when I was little and they would read our hand. You know, the gurus could read your yeah. hand and your patra, and they could tell you, you know, if you're going to have a good life, if you're not going to have a good life. And then when you got pregnant, they were able to read your planet and help you to choose the name of a child. And on that kind of stuff. But, you know, for Americans, they talked in this country here about destiny and free will. So talk to us about the difference between destiny and free will. And is everything all predestined for us? I mean, how do we know? Because people would say, sometimes you meet someone and you say, oh, my God, I feel like I've known you all my life. And I call that some cosmic connection, you know. But
absolutely.
So talk to us a little bit about destiny and free will.
Absolutely. Thank you for that question, Sita. So destiny, all the major events in our life that we have no control over. So think about all those times that you could have not possibly planned, right? Your parents, the house you were born in, your siblings. Sometimes even we might think that we are the one who chooses our spouse, but actually marriage is very karmic as well. We don't choose our spouses are chosen for us. Your children, you know, certain health problems that a person faces. So all these things that a person, all the things in life that we have no control over is our destiny, right? Now, how we respond to these events in our life that we have no control over is our free will. What is interesting is that all these actions that we perform in our free will gets accumulated as karma. And depending on how we have reacted and what we have performed, good or bad, we will either be rewarded in the future or we will be learning our lessons.
Yeah. And, you know, oftentimes we hear people talk about karma and they say, oh, karma is going to come and it's going to be a woman wearing high heels. What exactly is karma?
The karma is basically the actions you perform in your free will. Here it is. So, for instance, some of my clients I speak to now, let's say someone is in a bad marriage and the spouse has done something according to them that is ill for them. And then they tell me, Sidoth, you know, I want to take revenge. I have all this vengeance in my heart. I want him to pay for what he's done and so on and so forth. And now what has happened to us, right, is something that we are paying from our past life. It's a debt that we are paying. Wanting vengeance, wanting to take revenge, and doing a negative action towards that would be something that we will be doing in our free will, and that will be a karma. So whenever we perform any action in our free will, good or bad, let's say you see someone, you know, in trouble, and you instantly have a feeling to help them out. You have no selfish reason for it. That also is a karma that you perform. Now, this one is a good karma. You had absolutely no selfish reasons and you helped a fellow human being out. That's a good karma. You felt a certain jealousy towards someone and then you wanted to jeopardize their career. That's a bad karma. All these things get accumulated as a total karma that you have performed, and then it comes back to you as a reward or a lesson that you will learn. So the good events, think about all the good things, unexpected good that happened in your life, that was a result of your good karma in the past. And all the negative issues that we are dealing with are results of bad karma that we have performed ourselves in our past life or in the past, in this lifetime itself.
So, hi, this is Allie. I was wondering, when you're talking about good and bad karma, if I feel like I need to do something wicked, you know, particularly to a crappy spouse, then, you know, is that I shouldn't do it because that would bring bad karma on me, even though he's basically already rained bad karma all over me?
Right. So my point of this is that if you have a feeling, if the intention is to hurt the other person.
Indeed.
Right.
Yeah.
If the intention is to, Lord Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that karma is a little bit less about the action, but the intention behind the action. So let's say even if you're doing a donation to someone, but the intention is, oh, I want to gain something from this.
Yeah, well, and that is so true. Like sometimes you'll go like to a Hindu temple or something and you would see like a plaque on the wall and it'll have the people's name who donated millions or. And I don't like that. I'm like, okay, because then it makes you feel like crap with your $100, you know, but my intention of giving that $100 is pure. My heart is pure. And I feel like the persons who are displayed, I don't know if maybe their intention was good or bad, but it does make you feel like it's all about the intention.
It really is. And Ali, you know, coming back to your question, when someone is doing wrong with us, now there are two ways we can look at this. Either they are doing something bad to us because of something we did with them in the past and they are here to make us feel that pain. Because most of the pains that we are feeling in this lifetime is coming from an action that we have performed. This is a humbling thing to learn, but this is important, that it is coming to us because of something that we have done in the past. That's number one. That's one way to see it. Another way to see it is that maybe they are doing this to harm us in their free will. They are doing this action in free will, and this is not something that we did in the past. Either way, to end a karmic debt, the best way to deal with it is to forgive and let go. I mean, One should, yes, if someone's done something wrong and we want to report it, you know, that is one way to look at it. Still, we should still have an intention that we wish this person well, but there needs to be justice. Now, the intention is important around whatever actions we are doing. But if the intention is, oh, I hate them, there's vengeance, there's all this pent-up emotions, then we are constructing more debt with the other person. We will meet them again in the next lifetime to work it out. So it really depends on what we are trying to achieve here. If we are trying to get it over with, forgiveness is the way to go.
Right. You have to decide if you want to hurt that person or you're willing to forgive that person, clear your mind, your heart, your body, and your soul, and just move on positively.
Bang on. Absolutely.
Right. So I think, Ellen, you had a question for her?
I don't know if I have a question. I don't know that I've ever had the explanation of karma like this before. And really just, you know, being a good person, obviously, if you just get, you know, you have good intentions all the time, you should, you know, that's just a great explanation. I don't know that I had a question necessarily, but
it's nice to listen and learn, right?
Well, I got that light. You know, that kind of the light bulb just went off for me, too. And I am a good person. I really feel like I'm a good person.
You are.
And I try
yes,
and give to the community and give to. But, you know, obviously I've got those bad thoughts. So you think maybe bad thoughts are in my own head if I don't act on them? I'm not like charged karma points, right?
Yeah. Right. So thoughts, having thoughts is such a natural thing, right?
Right.
And just recognizing, you know, seeing yourself from outside yourself, recognizing that, okay, this thought is coming to me as in this mortal coil that I have, in this human body that I've had, I'm having this particular thought because I have a brain. But I can let go of this thought and forgive and let go because I don't want to build anything more negative with the fellow soul that I'm feeling.
Yeah, because negativity breeds negativity and positivity breeds positivity, right? And sometimes I say we're all on an earthly journey called life. But on this earthly journey sometimes, Sirat, we do meet people that in our past lives we had a karmic debt. How do we know when a karmic debt is over with someone? Because sometimes, for no reason, you'll be working with someone and you tell. I know this happened to me where someone was not performing her job and a patient was not taken care of properly. And I said, hey, this lady has been left in this condition for a while and I think you should give her a bath and take care of her and feed her and blah, right. blah, blah. And the girl did not like it that I spoke to her and told her what to do for this patient. And I got my car keyed. So is that a karmic debt that I got my car keyed? How do I know when karmic debt is over?
That's an interesting question. So, you know, the fact that you got your car keyed may or may not be a karmic debt. The other person could have done that in their free will. And if they did that in their free will, they will have to pay for it. Because this is the law of karma. This is the law of the universe, which is unavoidable. What you put out, you will receive in this world, lifetime after lifetime, you know? And, you know, if we were only here, like you asked me before that, you know, are we just, is everything predestined? If we were just here to live what was destined for us, then we would not have many lives. You know, we would just get it over with in this. But the fact that there is reincarnation, you know, and if you want to understand reincarnation a little better, you can just see how different people are born in different families. Someone's born in a billionaire's home, someone's born in a slum. So, and that person has not yet performed any karmas, but maybe they have performed certain karmas in their past lives to gain something in this life. But coming back to the original question, how do we know that a karmic debt is over with someone? I will just quickly touch on what a karmic debt is. When you feel a strong pull towards someone, anybody, a person, a place, an animal, a romantic partner, a colleague, a stranger down the road, it could be, or even if you meet someone, you don't feel a strong pull, you feel this, you know, sense of dislike also, you know, or a longing. Either of these emotions that you're feeling is coming from a karmic connection. How you know if a karmic debt is over is when you stop feeling those things. They cannot push your buttons anymore. And this can happen even when living in the same house with a spouse.
Wow.
So detached.
You explained it so well. So we have 3 minutes left. I wanted you to give our listeners your website or how someone could contact you. For our listeners who are listening to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends today on our fun, interesting, unscripted, and very educational show today, we're speaking with Sirat Mawa, and she is a spiritual coach, a karmic guide, and a Vedic astrologer. And she's going to give us her website and how someone could contact her if they need assistance with this world that we live in and all the bizarre and weird things that happen in our world. Give us your website.
Absolutely. So my website is www.souldrsirat.com. My Instagram is also souldrsirat.com, and my email address is souldrsirat@gmail.com.
So with the 2 minutes left, I know Danny's going to give us the cut signal pretty soon. How do we ensure that we do our best in this lifetime and, like Lord Krishna says, gain liberation?
Absolutely. So, you know, there are a few things that we can do. First of all, very important, whatever you lack in this life, give back to the world. So let's say you feel that you're lacking love. First, give love. You are probably lacking love because of something that you did in your past life to not gain as much love in this world. So when you give, you basically fill up that void and you start getting back. That's number one. Number two, having good intentions and doing your best to do positive in the world. And number three is having surrender and understanding that in situations which you cannot control, there's a higher power that's slightly bigger than you that is managing things for you and having faith in that higher power above you.
And I think we still have a good few seconds left. Can we save ourselves from the destined atrocities of our life? Like if something happened in our past life and we were born in a time when the planets were not aligned properly and we're born and now, like my mother used to say, you're born to catch your hell on earth. Some people really, really suffer. Like we were talking about the people coming through the borders, all those people fleeing, you know, and it's like, how is it possible? Like somebody like the Ambani family is so filthy, stinking rich. And then you have kids don't have food on the border. Is that all part of karma and the cosmic world?
It is. It very much is. So it is all part. We basically check the charts of the Ambani family. We see what planets they are bringing that is giving them all that wealth. And also now they have all this wealth, but what they do about it? Are they giving back to the world? Or
which
are they
do.
Exploiting? If they're exploiting, they will not continue with this in a separate lifetime or even in this lifetime if they exploit too much.
But Mira, so how do we help all the? Because I'm fiscally responsible and socially very compassionate. What can we do with the remaining 30 seconds to help those whose destiny is so horrible that they have to flee infested waters with rats and snakes and barbed wire just to come to a country where they can have this free will and destiny? How do we help people?
Right. We do our best. We do our best in our own capability. I always say this, that, you know, if, you know, $10 is the best you can do, do that. You know, we just have... And sometimes if money is not available, you know, having at least doing a small, if you're a religious or a spiritual person, doing a small prayer for them. You know, you see, even if you see a small accident on the road, just hoping in your heart that the person is safe, that is where you've put in a good karma.
to good intentions. Always do good and good will follow
us. Well, we will make sure we share all of this great information on our website as well as all of our social media. Thank you so much for your education and for the love that you gave us today. That was awesome. Of course, to Mike, who called in the first segment.
And I apologize. It's Dr. Seerat Mawa.
My apologies. Yes. So tune in each and every week here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, Mondays, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, here on 1510 WWBC. We'll see you next week.